The Guardian.
Who knows its nature?
You know that I am your friend. You don't have to do anything.
Stand by.
And curiosity often leads to trouble.
Make yourself free and comfortable. Loosen your clothes, move around, stretch. Stretch like a cat.
The Guardian Radio on MTS.
It's a peculiar place to have a party.
Hello, hello, welcome. It's the Guardian Radio Hour. I'm Kate Hutchinson and we're back with more stories from music's murky depths and tales of the unknown. We've had Nena Cherry on Jazz's Rebellion, Fat White Family on Outsider Ballads, Richard Dawson on The Naked Voice, Matthew Herbert on Ribbon. Poof. Last week it was John McIntyre from Tortoise on the Chicago music scene. And this week, I'm thrilled to say that stood right next to me in the NTS studio is the man who probably caused the most stir when we first announced me, our guest way back in January. He's got an incredible way with words and possibly even more incredible record collection. It's Mr. Stuart Lee. Hello.
Hi, thanks. This is the coolest room I've ever been in my life, this Dalston hipster radio studio. Fantastic.
You've got your hipster hat on.
I know, I brought it on. I know what the gear is.
Brilliant.
The dress code is.
Well, thank you for dressing, appropriately. So you're going to be joining the dots between, it's probably fair to say, your two biggest loves, stand-up and punk.
Well, punk's not like my massive favourite music, but the period that I got into stand-up was in the aftermath of punk, and there was a lot of interesting crossover, I think, between the bands and the comics that were working then. And so I thought we'd have a listen to some of the things that make sense in that context.
Well, I can't wait. Let's start with the first track, Jilted John by Jilted John.
Jilted John, yeah.
I've been going out. She said, listen, John, I love you, but there's this bloke I fancy.
So that was Jilted John by Jilted John, which came out as a single in 1978, is that right?
Yeah, well, I'd have been 10, and I remember finding that very funny and everyone singing it in the playground. And weirdly, I had the album of it. It was a fantastic concept album, the Jilted John album, which came with a Snakes and Ladders game where you could play the life of this adolescent boy. And there were little bits of weird dialogue and funny sketches in between the songs. And then one of my early gigs, I remember, was Graham Fellows, who was Jilted John.
Right.
In about 1990, I was on doing a circuit gig when I was starting out on the comedy circuit, and he was there as his new character, which was Graham Fellows, John Shuttleworth, the old man who plays songs he's written himself on the Casio organ. And, I couldn't believe that I was in this amazing world where I was on bills with people whose records I'd listened to as a kid, and I still get that all the time. And the sort of been an adolescent who listened to the John Peel show. John Peel was very important, I think, he played a lot of things that were early alternative comedy. He had radio sessions from Ted Chippington and Eric Bogosian, American sort of performance art stand-up, and to end up on bills with these people was really amazing. And go on.
Did you watch the performance of this on Top of the Pops?
Yeah, I thought it was incredible. It was so insolent and arrogant, and but also pathetic at the same time. It's just and really infuriating to your parents.
Because I saw a YouTube comment that said in that performance at the back, Greg Davies is the comedian. Greg Davies is playing the bass.
Child.
Right. Well, there you go. My dates a bit wrong.
Yeah, Greg Davies is about 43 years old, so he'd have been. It might have been him. He may have been a very big child, but
maybe just somebody who looked like him. Yeah. What about, okay, maybe I've got this wrong too, but what about the link between stand-up comedy and punk on this track? Because wasn't the guitarist someone from the Durrutti column?
Yeah, I think Vinnie Riley's on it somewhere. There's all sorts of people on that. And, you know, Martin Hannett produced it, who did Joy Division and everything. It's a great record. But, well, you know, I think that was he was part of that kind of Manchester scene that gave us Mrs. Merton and Steve Coogan and, you know, all that bunch of people. But, you know, I mean, it was a great one gag character, that one really good album. I mean, but it's, you know, the weird thing was, it's something that sort of spoke to you, and you felt it was really funny in a way that other stuff wasn't at the time. And it's hard to imagine now, the late 70s, as I was sort of coming into awareness of culture, there wasn't really a comedy that was for us, if you know what I mean. There was some sort of mainstream stuff, and then there was a rather sort of sophisticated Oxbridge-y satire kind of stuff. And it was in 79-80 when you started to become dimly aware of alternative comedy, that it seemed like an incredible thing was happening. Not anywhere you could see it. I mean, you've got to think, there was no YouTube, there wasn't the internet, but you could kind of read these things, and you knew that somewhere in London there was this club, the Comedy Store and the Comic Strip and whatever, where this new kind of thing was happening. And very occasionally you'd catch a glimpse of it. Like, there was a programme on BBC Two, one episode of it, called two episodes, Boom Boom Out Go the Lights. And it had all those new guys on it that we sort of knew existed but could never see, like Alexi Sale.
Who is the next track that we're going to play from his band, the Pop-Up Toasters.
Yeah.
What a name.
Yeah, well, this is a sort of parody of Dexy's Midnight Runners, who I think they were all mates with.
Well, this is called, it's called Alexi's Midnight Runners, Pop-Up Toasters. Is that the name of the track, Pop-Up Toasters?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Brilliant, let's hear it.
There's a lot of racial trouble in the world these days. Blacks and whites, Russians and Afghans. I don't know why they pick on them, I think they're really nice dogs. But there's only one device that can solve all this racial conflict. What is it?
Is it a big melting pot?
No!
Is it a model railway set?
No!
Is it a pop-up toaster?
Yes!
White and you come out brown. Pop up, toasters. Don't knock the toasters.
Okay.
Don't knock the toasters, eh?
That's much more annoying than I remember it. It's profoundly annoying, isn't it? I mean, not one kazoo, but loads. Superb.
Someone on the chat room, Heather Impulse, has said this sounds like every song Tim Vine writes jokes to.
Yeah, well, you know, that's Alexi Sale again. He was sort of in the periphery of your vision. You couldn't really get a fix on him. But you knew he was sort of out there. He put out this album, CAC, that was really brilliant, with a routine about Stoke Newington, actually, called, it was called What's On in Stoke Newington. Well, there was the What's On in Stoke Newington was a magazine which was one big piece of paper with F all written on it. That was the joke, right? And I thought, God, Stoke Newington, that's where Alexi Sale, how exciting, what a brilliant place. Then it became this sort of place where vegetarians and social workers lived in the 80s, who were very much his kind of his key demographic. It's very different now. Look at it. You wouldn't recognise it. Now it is, you know. But you couldn't really see these people. That was the thing. You sort of knew they were out there. And living in Birmingham, growing up in Birmingham, there wasn't a comedy store or a comic strip. It's hard to imagine now that every town's got a little designated comedy gig.
Somewhere and, you can go.
You know, you'd see people opening for bands. That's when you saw people. And in the, you know, immediate post-punk era, a lot of the gigs would be have a bit of a cabaret flavour to them. And it's funny that Alexi's doing a sort of parody of Dexy's Midnight Runners there, because they did have quite links with the comedy circuit. And when I saw Dexy's in, I mean, it's 1982, they had Peter Richardson, who went on to write all the comic strip films, opening for them. He went down incredibly badly. Well, I thought it was great. And I thought, God, I'd love to do that, you know.
So this came out in 1981, this track. Yeah. I mean, I know when you were a young punk, you would
a
young post-punk?
Yeah, no. Well, I was a John Peel listener.
A John Peel enthusiast. Yeah, yeah, yeah. As a young John Peel enthusiast, you would go to various festivals see The Fall. Mm. Did you ever sort of sneak out of your house or your parents' house to go and catch any comedy gigs?
Well, there wasn't anywhere to sneak to. I mean, this is the kind of thing, there wasn't anything on. You know, it's kind of hard to, if you lived in London, I mean, people I know that lived in the south of England, like Robin Ince, who's a great comic, told me that as a teenager he went to the Comedy Store, you know, to try and, you know, when he was 15, to try and see this. But it wasn't, I could have snuck out the house into Birmingham City Centre, but there wouldn't have been anything to see. There was nothing, there wasn't anything. You know, it's kind of hard. The weird thing is, now that it's everywhere, it's hard to imagine. Alexi Sale's got a book that's just come out about his the '70s and the '80s of comedy, and you know, he says with a mixture of humility and arrogance somewhere in it that he's not, you know, he looks at the world now of stadium gigs and comedy clubs in every town, and he's not saying it wouldn't have happened without him, but it wouldn't have happened in quite the same way. And it's certainly true. It was unimaginable in those days that there'd be on the scale it is now. In fact, I remember, as late as 1990, seeing Newman and Badil doing the Cochrane Theatre, which held about 350 people. And I thought, this has gone out of control. This is insane. This shouldn't be happening, that people should do 350 people. It's ridiculous. We need to get some perspective on this. You know, so what's happened to comedy is just incredible. And it was, you know, you'd see people, you know, there were also people you'd hear about, like Keith Allen, who was supposed to be, you kind of would read about Keith Allen, who's now best known as, he's probably best known now as Lily Allen's dad, tragically, or as an actor. But, you know, in the 80s, people writing about his stand-up were saying it's absolutely amazing, but there's not really any documentation of it, you know.
So just in a nutshell, very quickly, for the listeners and people that perhaps don't know what the alternative comedy scene was like in the 1980s, can you just quickly define what was going on?
Well, there was a perception that that comedy was controlled by a sort of Oxbridge elite writing clever satire, or a sort of mainstreamy stand-up scene doing old gags, most of which were sexist, racist, and homophobic. And that's not an unkind assessment of the situation. Weirdly, it's almost where we are again now. And a Marxist would tell you that means it's time for a... Marxist theory would tell you it's time for a revolution again.
And this next track by Keith Allen,
was in a band called Atoms, actually, that made a single that were quite a good fallish kind of group. But this is something Keith Allen did. I'm not even sure we're supposed to have this. He put this out as a white label sometime in the early 80s as this character, Rinker. The song's called Sex Boots Dread. And I, reading between the lines, I think it's Keith Allen's response to what he perceived as homophobia in the Rastafarian community, probably when he was a squatter in Notting Hill Gate in the early 80s.
Well, it's very punk that we're playing it. Right. This is Boot Sex Dread.
Me think about the lion as him rest upon the sun. Me think about the help that me have from white man. And me want to cry in, because me listen to the lion. Me know when we talk that me with brethren. Me know that me mix up with real good friend. Good creation, it not absurd situation. Because me black and me proud and me Rastafari. Me and your people, we not see eye to eye. There's a difference in me lifestyle. There's a difference in me dance style. What a difference in me peace file. Because me black and me proud and me Rastafari. And me homosexual. Homosexual.
So that was Keith Allen as Rinker, Boot Sex Dread.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to kind of think yourself back. Imagine that coming on somewhere and people going, what the hell is this? In some kind of club somewhere. And it would have infuriated people as well. It would have made them, I mean, that seemed to be his modus operandi, Keith Allen, was to just be incredibly annoying, basically. But it's just really sad. People tell you that it was incredible what he did, but there's not really any documentation of it. And again, that's hard for people to understand now. Like, a kid does his first open spot now, his mate films it on a camera phone. By the time he gets home, it's on YouTube, and there's 20 people in Washington State in America saying that he's rubbish, you know. But there are amazing talents from the period that I started getting into stand-up, of whom there's no film, there's barely any. John Dowie was another amazing person that there's about 70 minutes recorded of a guy's 20-year career. And then it's weird how these people sort of were brilliant in a time where there was not everyone had camera phones on the go all the time, you know.
But then I suppose it just takes one enthusiast, perhaps such as yourself, to, you know, write a letter in support of, or slagging off the Edinburgh Comedy Awards, perhaps, for people to be like, oh, yeah, so that
are you talking about
great.
The Frank Chickens?
I am
yeah, well,
about
Frank
the Frank
Chickens, again, the reason I put this in is because, you know, again, it's in the early 80s, Billy Bragg would do these tours where he would put these really odd bills together of things that you'd imagine were sort of incompatible, but actually it would be like, you know, I mean, one of the Billy Bragg shows I saw was Billy Bragg, the Sid Presley Experience, who were the Godfathers, and they live around here somewhere.
They were,
anyway, they were like
somewhere.
A Stooges kind of band, you know, and then, right. Phil Jupitus, right, when he was very young, he was a performance poet called Porky the Poet, and it was hilarious. We didn't see people not much older than us doing comedy about things that we were interested in. It was really incredible to see Phil Jupitus when I was 14, 15. And the Frank Chickens were on that as well, who were a Japanese performance art duo whose intent, I think, was to satirise assumptions about Japanese women and women generally. And, you know, that part of it I didn't really get as a young teenage boy, but I thought it was really funny and really clever, and they were very, very bold performers and made some quite subversive pop singles. Anyway, a few years back, when Foster's took over the Edinburgh Comedy Awards,
indeed,
they kind of created this kind of trumped up thing where you had to vote for the best act of all time or something. And obviously that had ever been nominated. And obviously what they wanted was the public would just vote for the one they'd heard of. So then the brand name of Foster's would be able to be attached to Peter Kay or someone, you know.
Yeah.
And I just casually mentioned somewhere that the Frank Chickens might be the best act that were ever nominated, for all we know, but there's not really any evidence of them and no one knows them. There's not much film of them or whatever. And without any, I didn't do this, but it created an internet campaign whereby the Frank Chickens won by an absolute landslide the Foster's Award for the greatest comedy act of all time. They reformed as this huge sort of, well, there was a version of them now, it's like a huge dance troupe, and they did a version of that live. And, and I think then Foster's had to change the parameters of the award. They said it was they made it about four people win it. So
you
that
messed
they could,
with the system.
I messed with the system. It nearly turned really nasty, actually. But the weird thing was I hadn't engineered it. It happened by accident. And you kind of forget, if you're my age, that the power of social media, that you sometimes have to be, you have to be careful, because good and bad things can happen very quickly without you having any control over it.
Especially because you know. You're not on social media. Oh, whoa.
No. I mean, that is an indication of the power of people like Foster's as well. That either you start talking about
down.
Them on the internet and your actual, by some mysterious power they have, a speaker will fall down. It also shows the listeners how dangerous radio can be. Did you think you were right? I mean, I could have been, in fact, you said to me, why don't you sit on that stool? And I said, it's all right, I'll stand up. And if I had done, I'd now be dead. And the last thing I would have got to talk about. I know, yeah.
Wow.
This would get a lot of traffic, though.
Yeah.
A lot of web traffic would be driven through.
This would be notorious.
Yeah,
they definitely let us keep doing the show.
I know, yeah, it'd be good.
Well, maybe we should listen
to
the Frank
Chickens.
All right. So that was, oh, hello.
You know what? That's really great, isn't it? That.
Yeah.
It's taking you by going. Surprise, isn't it? The listeners will think that's another speaker falling down. Killing them.
Well, I mean, I think it's funny that you played that track. That track was very NTS.
I know. It would really fit on the rest of the station the rest of the time. All the regular listeners are going, oh, thank God. Early 80s Japanese funk. We're back on track with the other stuff. That is much better than I remember. It's superb, isn't it? Really great. I suspect there's probably... a lot of the people that work with them were these sort of British free jazz types. Probably Steve Beresford might be on there somewhere, who We can see the Vortex Club out the window where he. But yeah, so look, what are you going to now? Ted Chippington, is that what we're playing now?
No, we are going to play that. But first I'm going to give you a little NTS-style nugget of information that's come through in the chat room, because that's what we do here. Someone, Selby by Davis, said, We Are Ninja had forgotten about this. There was a Ninja Tune 12-inch re-release with loads of remixes back in 2000.
I expect that is going to become in heavy rotation on NTS in the near future.
Get down that record shots
to it.
Also, completely unrelated, but also someone's just tweeted me. This is the modern age we live in, you see. Playing the radio show, someone's tweeted me. And we were talking about people on social media, young artists before. Johnny Bayfield says, Ask Stu what he thinks young artists like me can do now to survive financially and still create.
Yeah, well, this is an interesting thing, isn't it? I mean, I keep getting asked to go to colleges and schools and talk about how do you write comedy. And I know how you write comedy. There's a whole load of practical considerations that weren't relevant to us, which is, how do you actually survive while you're doing it? I mean, what I did was I came to London. I lived in cheap accommodation. A lot of people I knew lived in squats around places like this, in areas that are now gentrified beyond recognition. Mm-hmm. I got temping jobs, and I got a little research job for a publisher, and it was flexi time, and that bought me the time to do the comedy. But of course now, today, that would be an unpaid internship. All these little things have disappeared. I don't know what the answer is, and I think it seems ironic to me that, you know, this year in London the mayor's saying, it's the 40th anniversary of punk, we're having a big punk celebration, when between them, the you know, landlords, the establishment, the educational establishment, everyone has created a situation where financially a creative explosion like that will never happen again. It can't happen in the same way, because artists need to be able to live places. And, you know, the cities round here, you know, the fact that Dalston became an artistic community in Shoreditch is part of the way that estate agents sell it to people. It becomes its provenance.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
You couldn't have that here now in the way that you did 10 years ago. So, I don't know. I think you give up, mate, is what I'm saying. There's no future in it. Get a job.
Well, good to keep it, you know, light on the Garden Radio Hour. But the person that inspired you to create is Ted Chippington. So this is Phil, like, Phil?
Yeah,
can I just say something about it?
Yeah, it's just like, if I hadn't seen this guy live, my whole life would have been completely different. So, Ted Chippington was unknown. I went to see The Fall in 1984 in Birmingham. Ted was supporting them. He came out in a sort of teddy boy outfit, stood still, looked like he didn't want to be there at all, told the same joke over and over again in a monotonous voice, wound everyone up, and I thought, oh God, that is what I want to do. And it was, and it absolutely changed my life. And I've met him once or twice since, and I can't sort of almost bring myself to thank him enough. I can't, and he was innately hilarious bloke. I mean, this is him doing an Alvin Stardust song called Feel Like Buddy Holly, in a monotonous voice and changing it a little bit.
All right, let's play Feel Like Buddy Holly.
I was at the airport the other day, meeting Alvin Stardust, and I saw him standing over in the distance. Thought I'd make my way over to see him. I got there, he was looking a bit sad. I said, what's wrong, Alvin? He said, well, I've been waiting here all day, watching the planes come into land. I couldn't stand to see them land without you. I said, ah, well, I got here yesterday, thought I'd get the train here today.
All right.
great, isn't it?
Yeah, so that was Elvis, The Last 10 Days by the Nightingales.
Yeah, can I just, it's such a funny track. It's the diary of Elvis's last 10 days. And the final line is, tomorrow I'll start my diet and answer some of my fan mail. And I think it's such a great, it's a long Shaggy Dog story gag, really, but it's also got something profound about procrastination and mortality. And I loved the Nightingales as a kid. They were, and they're still going now. They're playing my ATP, which I've curated at Prestatyn in the middle of April. And I have in my pocket, I have in my hand a piece of paper. I've got a mobile phone message from the Prestatyn saying that's all sorted out and it's going ahead. So if you read on the internet that it's cancelled, it absolutely isn't. But, yeah, and Ted Chippington's doing it as well.
Yeah,
who we heard before, who was on the Nightingales label. And, you know, like Ted for me is, he's like, you get all these people a bit older than me, they go, oh, I saw the Sex Pistols in 77 and it changed my life. But for me, it's seeing Ted Chippington in 84.
So just to go back to what you were saying about him supporting The Four, who I know are your all-time favourite band, was that a sort of regular occurrence for comedians to be supporting punk
bands? Yeah, in those days,
bands?
you'd see sort of people on with bands, you know, and it stopped pretty quickly because it didn't really work, to be honest.
was it because they were cheap or something that they wanted
to book
them?
Well, you know, it was sort of, you know, it was, things were a bit mixed up in those days, you know, and I mean, there were sort of, you know, you'd see poets on bills, you know, with people, and I mean, there was, you'd see these kind of odd mixed up gigs, and it was very lucky, really, to be young then. I never would have thought, oh, it was good to be young in the 80s at the time, but actually it was, you know, you had to find these things for yourself, and you'd come across them in really odd places, and they assumed incredible weight because of that. I mean, that Ted Chippington gig that I was at, was what's even more fantastic about it is I was in that audience, and I wanted to write comedy, but I didn't think I could ever perform it, because performers, I thought, had to be big, confident people. And Ted looked exactly as if he didn't want to be there, and that's how I would feel if I was on stage. And I thought, well, I could do that, because I wouldn't want to be there either. And then that gig got recorded and released as a single by on the Nightingales label, Vindaloo. And so I've got this 7-inch single, which is the moment that I've knew what I wanted to do, and it's an audio. I've got a recording of, and I know that I was there thinking, this is it.
See, I've got this image of you at this gig.
I was
watching
dressed like this. Exactly.
Not much has changed. For those that obviously can't see, it's
a green
fleece, which is very fetching, and a lovely roll-top beanie. Yeah. Just to paint the image for you. Yeah. But going back to this gig where you had The Fall, your favourite band, and Ted Chippington, I have this image of you as a young boy having to make a choice between whether to be a rock star or a comedian.
Well, I couldn't have been a rock star. You have to be better at the guitar than me. But it was... No, it was. I never entertained that idea, but no, I wanted to write comedy. I thought I could write, and I'd write comedy, and I liked stand up, but I didn't imagine myself as the sort of delivery mechanism for jokes. And then I just saw this, that he didn't have to do it like Ben Elton, you know. You didn't have to run around and be happy and confident. You could look like you would rather be anywhere but on the stage, and look as if the act of doing it was a terrible chore, and as if you hated the people that had come to see you. And you know, and that's, very much in the shadow of that aspect of Ted, you know. Obviously, I've written dozens of hours of material, which he never did. He had like half an hour, and it was the same joke over and over again. But, you know, an incredible thing to see then.
And back then, just to get this straight, were loads of comedians putting out punk albums or putting out albums?
Stand-up comedy was a thing that you bought albums of it, you know, and you listened to them. And, you know, there weren't DVDs, there weren't videos. A lot of people of my age and older, your experience of listening to stand-up was listening to 20-minute sides of vinyl, you know. And there's some incredible stand-up albums from the 70s, particularly American ones, and from the 60s and 50s, the Lenny Bruce ones, the Richard Pryor ones, the George Carlin. I mean, again, I wasn't listening to this at the time, but, you know, the George Carlin vinyl is fantastic. Yeah.
And the next track that we're going to hear is from someone that switched it around the other way. So they were a musician first, and then they became a stand-up comedian. Have I got that right?
When I first went to The Fringe in 1987... people said, you have to see Earl Oakin. He's a legend of The Fringe. in 1987 this was, and I went to see Earl Oakin, who was already an amazing out-of-time figure. He wore spats and a suit, and he played sort of parodies of jazz and blues songs on the guitar and did an incredible impression of a trumpet without having a trumpet with his mouth. And last night, I booked him for a benefit I did for an old people's charity, because he's now the age of the people that would benefit. He's still going. And 20 years previous to when I first saw him, he was a Tin Pan Alley songwriter in the sort of psychedelic pop era. And I think we're going to hear a song he wrote for Cilla Black, are we?
Yeah, this is a really exciting song for people that know Cilla Black's music. This sounds nothing like Cilla Black's
Cilla Black
songs.
On acid.
All right.
Abyssinian Secret.
Abyssinian Secret, that's the one.
Inside my little castle, let me show you something that is quite unique. On my trip to Abyssinia, bought it from a peddler who had served a sheep. Forget.
This is called Hats Off to Luton, and it's an imagined dialogue between my mum and dad the day they moved from Islington to Luton in 1955.
They used to fashion hats here years ago. They did, you know, they fashioned hats of very high renown. However many hats here, do you know? Every day a sea of hats, sufficient hats to drown.
I thought it might not finish then. That was Hats Off to Luton by John Hegel. It was beautiful, by John Hegel. So was he a punk in your eyes?
Well, John Hegley, again, was someone you'd hear on the John Peel Show doing sessions as a kid. And he was in this group, the Popticians, that were a bit sort of English, whimsy, psychedelic, Robin Hitchcock kind of thing. Superb. And gradually he became more of a sort of performance poet, comedian. And again, the first time I met him, I remember I was doing a gig in Liverpool in 1990, and I could not believe I was on a bill with John Hegley, and I still feel like that now. I mean, again, he lives around here, and I know him now, and I see him around all the time, and I, you know, he knows my kids. He does little workshops in the library for children, and I have a flashback to being an adolescent when I meet him, and I can't believe that I'm on speaking terms. Yeah, you know, it's fantastic.
One of those guys.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm surprised that he's not playing your ATP Weekender, that you didn't sort of slip him on the bill somehow.
Well, maybe I'll do another one. I mean, that's the thing. There's so many people, you know. To be honest, I'm sort of waiting to see. I've put in people that owe me a favour for the comedy. I'm waiting to see how the stand up works. I've put in people that I know and trust, you know, because sometimes nowadays, you know, comedy at a music event, it's not always, you know, so I've got a special room that is for spoken word, and we'll see how it works. But maybe next time, you know, hopefully I can do another one if it doesn't all go bust.
Well, you've got, right, well, you've got loads of great bands on there, The Fall, Boredoms, give me some other ones that you've got on there, Raincoats.
Yeah, The Raincoats, and some things from this century. You've got Shopping, Trash Kit, XE Stryland Head. Have you seen them?
I haven't.
They're like a gamelan orchestra of tabletop guitars from Liverpool. It's superb.
Well, what I was really interested in is that you've got Charlotte Church's Pop Dungeon as a sort of brief respite from all of the difficult music.
I think that's what saved the whole thing. When it looked like there were problems with Pontins, like the Pontins man apparently said, oh, I hope this goes ahead because I was looking forward to seeing Charlotte Church. So I think she's the unofficial saviour of the whole event, you know. So yeah.
And what she's got this Pop Dungeon. What's your sort of guilty pop pleasure?
What
what's your floor filler? What would get you on the dance floor?
What would get me on the dance floor? I don't know, probably early 80s electronica, Human League, things like that maybe. Stuff that I remember dancing at school discos to. And any ska stuff, really.
Oh, really?
Yeah, from like, you know, late 70s, early 80s, the Beats, things like that.
Okay.
Well, I still go and see when they had this version of them come around, I always go and see them.
Well, Charlotte's taking notes, I'm sure.
No, I think she might be doing a lot of Bowie covers. I'm not sure exactly what she's doing. I'm looking forward to it.
But it's all going ahead.
I've got it. 100% safe. Look, I can show you the text.
Okay, show me the text.
I'll show you
afterwards. We'll just let everyone know that ATP is safe.
Happening. Yeah,
it's happening.
Yeah.
Otherwise, Charlotte Church will be marching down.
You're right. Yeah.
Yeah, with her flags. Yeah. Okay, so the next track is by Circles.
I thought we'd run these two together. When I started on the circuit, some of my earliest friends on the comedy circuit were Kevin Eldon and Roger Mann, who did a double act at the time. And Kevin Eldon, we know and love today as the star of all good comedy programs ever. Roger Mann gave up and advised me to do the same 15 years ago. He said, this isn't going to work out, this stand-up thing for us. We need to get out before we're old men with no savings. And he trained to... it was not an unreasonable point of view, you know. And he trained to do web design, and he now lives in the south of France. So he did a fantastic stand-up, Roger Mann, hugely influential. You hear echoes of him everywhere. He had an opening line that was funnier than most people's act, which was, I had been called upon to design a new kind of pig. That's a great opening line for any story. And but both Kevin and Roger had been in bands in the 70s. Kevin's band did two Peel sessions. First we're going to hear a track from a demo by his group at the time called Circles, and then a rip from Swindon local television of Roger Mann's band Cats, who recently reformed actually. This is so Circles and Cats.
Wowza.
You know, Roger Mann, who's in that band, Cats, they made one single. I said, have you got any of them left? A couple of years ago. He said, no, we sold so few copies, I took the thousands and chucked them in a skip in Swindon. And they're now on the internet, Japanese collectors paying 500 quid a pop for it.
Oh my goodness.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So, Cats, K-A-T-Z, that is.
So I've got in my things from the internet here that they rode the new wave of post-punk optimism. Do you think can you sort of see the link between comedy and punk or post-punk?
Well, I think you know, the post-punk era, everything was, you know, lots of different styles of things were jumbled up. There was a degree of social mobility as well, which you have to remember, which is like, and you know, when you were talking earlier and someone's texted in about how do you make a living as an artist, it wasn't a consideration. So you could do a really weird act and probably get by, you know. Yeah. And so I suppose there's something very, and also there'd been a boom in education, hadn't there? Post-war, everyone was able to go to polytechnic and learn how to do things and you know, or be at drama school for 5 years on a grant. So it did come out of that period in the same way as punk came out of a squat culture, you know, and people were able to do these uncommercial groups because they didn't have to think about the everyday necessities of life, I suppose.
Well, it's been a really super interesting show, and thanks for coming down. I'm sorry that we almost killed you.
It's all right. I was feet away from that. I'm good to go out.
So we're ending on the Swinging Cats Away.
Yeah. Well, you know, I used to have this single as a kid. It's an old two-tone single. I think they only made two or one, the Swinging Cats. And life has, these days, a habit of cycles of things. Jane Bombain, who was the singer of the Swinging Cats, now runs a lovely gig in Brighton called Jane Bombain's, and this is her singing with the Swinging Cats Away.
I hope that Charlotte Church plays it at ATP.
For more great downloads, go to theguardian.com/audio.